The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 7, texts number 13 and 14, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on July 4th, 2008, in Atlanta, Georgia, USA.
So today, we are studying from the most beautiful Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 7. Text number 13 and 14, we will simply recite 13 congregation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yadamrite Karva Shinjayanam Vireshvato Viryugatengateshu Vrikodara Vidhagata Vimarsha Bhagno Rudande Dhritarashtra Putre. So now text 14. Bartu Priyang Dranu Ritisma Pashyam Krishna Sutanang Svapatang Shiransi Upaharad Vipriyame Vatashya Jugupshitam Karma Vigarhayanti. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vodanda Tri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their desired destinations, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhishmasen, the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama, beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, and delivered them as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased in the least. Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Sri Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, where the Lord Himself spoke about Himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna, because it is spoken by the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha, because it is spoken about the Lord. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by His order. Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna Himself in the garb of a devotee of Krishna. And therefore the versions of both Lord Krishna and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada has placed this in italics with special emphasis, this sentence that I'm reading to you just now. Lord Chaitanya desired that all who were born in India seriously understand such Krishna kathas, and then after full realization, preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity of the stricken world.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Pada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Raghunatan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Savaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha.
So one has to be careful when serving one's spiritual master. Ashwatthama thought he would please Dronacharya by cutting off the head. The sleeping sons of Draupadi. Big mistake. Very big mistake. Sometimes we think that we're pleasing our spiritual master by doing this or that. But it's a big mistake. Therefore, we should consult. He should have consulted with Duryodhana before doing such a thing, a drastic act. Then he would have learned that no, don't do that. Because that's the only future. We're all being wiped out on this battlefield. These are the future of our of our dynasty. See, if they are killed, then there will be nothing left. So this is an important lesson. Never act whimsically. Always consult with the spiritual master when in doubt. Or if he's not available, then with senior Vaishnavas. Always consult before anything questionable is done. One should be very careful in the pathway of bhakti, not to make mistakes. And Prabhupada is picking up a very strong point. He's making a very strong point. It's very rare when Prabhupada italicizes like this in his books. It's very, very rare. So when Prabhupada does this, it's very, very important thing to know. In this room today, I see some of you were born in India. We have a number of Indian-born devotees here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yes, 7 Indian-born devotees. Huh? I'm counting. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, born in India. Correct? Yes. 7 Indian-born devotees in this room. This is a special instruction to all of you Indian-born devotees from His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who is sitting here today on His Vyasasam, to bless you with His presence. He is instructing specifically that you must seriously understand the Krishna Kathas, namely Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. You must understand them. Not understand them, but seriously understand. There's a difference. You understand? You can understand something, you know, casually. Or you can understand it seriously. Or you can say you can understand it superficially. Or you can understand it in depth. An in-depth understanding. So Prabhupada's order now, those of you who weren't born in India, myself included, you're not off the hook. Because previously this entire planet was India. So actually everyone can take this instruction of Prabhupada. Because formerly this was part of India. You don't believe me? I went to a museum one time in Houston. They had, you know, the American Indians. Actually, they weren't, that was Columbus's mistake, but actually it was true in the roundabout way. He thought he had reached India. He was looking for an easier trade route to India to make money. In those days, India was the wealthiest place in the whole world. Marco Polo, who went there by the land route, he wrote that this is the wealthiest place. You can look in the writings of Marco Polo. This is the wealthiest place in the entire planet. It was opulent like anything, you see. This is the days when Vedic culture was still holding strong, you see, in India. They think now we're advanced. We have taken up, you know, industrialization. But India was the most opulent country when it was Vedic, more Vedic, you see. Not when it became industrialized. It's another lesson to be derived here. But anyway, he was looking for a trade route, a shortcut to India so they can make more money. And he hit land here in the Western Hemisphere. He said, oh, Indian. He thought it was Indian. So he named all the people Indians. He called them Indians. The West Indies. Now they've been known as Indians. And that name somehow stuck. After all these centuries, we still call the Native Americans Indians. When actually they are, because the whole world is Indian culture. I was just in Peru last week. One devotee, I was having prasadam in the home of one disciple of Jayapataka Swami. He showed me the traditional art of the local Indians. And they had Hanuman. They were worshipping Hanuman. He showed me so many little statues. They were actually worshipping Hanuman. So the Vedic culture was formerly here. So those of you who think, well, I'm glad I wasn't born in India and I don't have to worry about following Prabhupada's order. Sorry, actually. Everyone can take this. But especially those who were born in the modern day India, especially applies to them because it was stated 500 years ago by Lord Chaitanya. Bharata Bhumite, anyone who is born in the holy land of India. So it especially applies to those who were born in India, the modern day India. They must seriously understand this Krishna Gatha. And then what do? They must preach. Then after full realization, that means, that's another thing. Yeah. The first step is serious understanding. And then what comes next? Full realization. That means you can't just let it remain theoretical. All right, you've got a good, serious, theoretical understanding of the philosophy. Great. Step number one is accomplished. Congratulations. You've got a good, serious understanding of the philosophy. Great. That you've done step number one. Now, step number two is full realization. That means you've completely thrown yourself into bhakti. 24/7. Every thought, every word. I don't care if you're living in a temple or you're living at home. It doesn't matter. The same principle applies. Lord Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living at home and he saw Vrindavan manifested in his own house while he was doing his household duties. So whatever you're living, in the temple, you're living at home, it doesn't matter. You have to fully throw yourself into bhakti with full realization. Your every thought, your every word, your every deed is for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna in all times, places, and circumstances. That's called full realization. You see, you've taken it up in practice. Whether you're at home, whether you're at the office, whether you're in the commute, whether you're in the lines at the grocery store, or you're in the doctor's office, or the dentist's office. Full realization. You're living in bhakti 24/7. You see, in all your relationships, bhakti becomes central. That's called full realization. And then, after that, then, step number three, you preach it. To who? To everyone in all parts of the world. It's interesting, when Lord Chaitanya gave this order, the original order was given to the Brahmin Kurma in Kurma Chetra. He said to the people of your country. But now Prabhupada is saying to everyone in all parts of the world. So this is the greater conception of country. The global country, you see. So in one sense, our country is the entire globe. They now call it the global village because of all, you know, modern day communication and transportation. It's being referred to sometimes as the global village. You see? So one should preach that transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. Wherever you are, you should preach. If you're in Atlanta, you preach in Atlanta. If you're in Nashville, you preach in, wherever you are, you preach in Memphis. Wherever you are, find the way to share this message. That's the order. And that's step number four. And then number five, what will be the result of this? The result will be absolutely amazing. Because what will happen is, Prabhupada says, that will bring about the desired peace and prosperity of the stricken world. What is the world stricken by? The world stricken usually refers to some disease. Oh, he's stricken with cancer. Or he's stricken with AIDS. You see? Stricken normally refers to when, you know, some disease attacks you and takes over you. It's a very heavy word, stricken. You see? So what is this world stricken with? The disease of bodily consciousness. And what are the symptoms of this disease? Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. These are the symptoms of one who is stricken by the disease of bodily consciousness. When one has bodily consciousness, what does one try to do? We all want to enjoy, isn't it? Anandamaya Vyasa. The nature of the living being is to enjoy. So if we think that I'm the body, then we will naturally try to enjoy by what means? By gratifying the senses. The eyes, the nose, the tongue, the ears, the belly, and the genitals. We will naturally try to gratify ourselves if we think that we're the body. We'll try to gratify these senses. Especially the tongue and the genitals. They're the leading senses of gratification. It's all based on the false conception of the self. But if you realize that I'm not the body, I'm an eternal spiritual being. This body is just a garment. Just like now I have this chadar on, you see. I can take the chadar off. Am I the same person? Or am I different now? I'm the same person. With or without the chadar, you see. I'm still the same person. So whether you have that body on or you don't have it, you're still the same. You understand? Whether you have this body or you don't have that body, it's just a garment. It's not you. One has to be convinced, first and foremost, that I am not this body. Then you have to understand that actually I'm an eternal spiritual being and I'm associated with the Lord who has an identity in the spiritual world. Somehow or other, I started daydreaming that what would it be like if I was the Supreme? And then I actually became a full-on dream, or a nightmare, actually, is a better word for it. We started dreaming, yes, I am the Supreme. The day we were daydreaming a little bit, what would it be like if I was the Supreme? We went a little deeper into a night dream. I am the Supreme. And we found ourselves in this world, a special place where all the dreamers are allocated. It's called the material world, where they can all have their dream together. We can all share the same dream that I am the Supreme. But the trouble is, I'm thinking I'm the Supreme and you're thinking you're the Supreme. And therefore, there's fight. As soon as my dream conflicts with your dream, then we fight. You can throw two rocks in a pond, you see, and the little ripples come out from those rocks, and it's fine until the ripples clash, you see. This English word clash, it comes from the Sanskrit word klesha. Same word, you see. Klesha, clash, same thing. As soon as my circle of thinking I'm the Supreme conflicts with yours, then we have klesha, clashing, you see. So we're stuck in this dream right now. The dream that I'm the Supreme. You see, our dreams are conflicting with each other. Therefore, we are fighting like anything, especially in the Kali Yuga. But if we can wake up from this dream of false bodily identification, false I am the center of the universe consciousness, if we can wake up from this dream and realize I'm just a tiny humble servant of the Supreme. Then we can begin to taste the actual happiness. Then we can actually enjoy on the spiritual platform in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where there is an unlimited reservoir of pleasure available at every second, every millisecond. There are unlimited oceans of rasa, unlimited oceans of pleasure available at every minute for one who reconnects with his actual spiritual identity. Not theoretical only, but practical. You can taste it. Krishna consciousness is delicious. It's tasty. When one achieves the stage known as ruchi, it's like the ultimate love, honoring the ultimate love feast at every second. And it just keeps getting tastier and tastier and tastier. Right now, we're not there yet. We get little sneak previews of it here and there to encourage us, you see. What's holding us back? Our inertia, you see. That's what's holding us back. So an intelligent person, what does he do with his inertia? He kicks them out. Get the hell out of my life. I don't need you anymore, Mr. Inertia. Mr. Inertia, get out. My dear Anarta tribe, you don't need to camp out in my heart anymore. I'm evicting you today. Mr. Lust, Mr. Anger, Mr. Greed, Mr. Madness, Mr. Illusion, Mr. Envy, get out now and don't you ever come back. Devotee understands how to actually enjoy. We are not against enjoyment. We're the ultimate pleasure seekers. We simply know how to enjoy, that's all. It's like in Hawaii, and also I've seen in Southern California, in San Diego. The boys, and some girls also, some here and there, they like to surf, they like to ride the waves. You see? Prabhupada called them sea sufferers. But we know how to ride the wave, you see. We know how to ride the wave of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. How to catch that wave of his mercy and ride it all the way back to home, back to Godhead. That we have learned from his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. How to catch that wave of unlimited bliss, unlimited nectar, with full knowledge and with amazing love that manifests within your heart for all living creatures throughout the totality of existence. Prabhupada has given us this very special blessing, which is more valuable than anything you can even conceive of. There is one demigod, his name is Kuvera. He is a treasure of the demigods. The amount of wealth that is under his treasury is inconceivable. Here in America, they're very proud of Fort Knox, where they have the gold bullion. It's nothing. It's just like cheap trinkets compared to what Kuvera has in his treasury. Valuable jewels, inconceivable quantities of valuable jewels and gold. It would just absolutely stagger the imagination. But that is nothing compared to the value of one of the treasure which has been obtained by someone who has gotten a taste for chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in our present neophyte condition, we don't have much taste. A little taste is there. That's why we're chanting. We don't have so much taste yet. But if we will practice on a daily basis, rising early in the morning, taking bath, dressing ourselves in devotional clothing, putting tilak on, singing the Gavastakam prayers to Srila Prabhupada and Guru, and then chant very nicely Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on our japa beads. and then have nice Krishna Prasadam breakfast, then we'll be completely surcharged, you see, with bhakti. And we can do our daily duties as a preacher or as a worker or as a business manager, whatever our daily activities. We can do that in Krishna consciousness, complete Krishna consciousness, and be ideal examples for the world, preach by our very example, you see, on how to become Krishna conscious. And then, in that mood of full absorption, by sharing this knowledge with others, by sharing Prabhupada's books with others, by sharing this knowledge, by sharing this mercy that we've gotten from Srila Prabhupada and his wonderful, wonderful followers, you see, by sharing this mercy, then we can create a revolution on this planet and free it from the turmoil and the poverty which is ravaging it at the present time. So we have the greatest opportunity. We get to become spiritual revolutionaries on behalf of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. We get to dedicate our lives for igniting a spiritual revolution on this planet. There's nothing more exciting. We can live on the cutting edge of world history. Just by taking this order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we are not living in some drab, dull, boring existence. We are living on the very cutting edge of world history. What's happening right now with this Krishna consciousness movement, in the future, the historians will be writing down as the greatest turning point in the history of the world. Do you realize that that's going to be, Prabhupada's movement will be described in this way by the future historians? So those persons who are dedicated to preaching this movement of Srila Prabhupada, they will be in the history books. They will all be in the history books as the great heroes that assisted Srila Prabhupada in making this movement successful all over the world. Of course, we're not after the glory. We don't care to be recognized. But you know what Prabhupada said? He said, "You're always saying all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Why don't you become glorious?" Prabhupada wants us to become glorious by preaching. He said, "He wants us to become glorious. We don't want to be glorified. We don't want to be glorified. We just want to glorify Srila Prabhupada. But he wants us to be glorious. Why? Because you can judge a tree by the fruit. You see, if you become a first-class preacher or a first-class Vaishnava, then that's the best glorification for your Guru Maharaj and for Srila Prabhupada. I say, oh, this devotee is very Krishna conscious. He's a great preacher. Well, who is your spiritual master? We can ask that devotee, and immediately that glorifies his spiritual master, you see. Well, this spiritual master from the tree of this guru, whether it's Jayapataka Maharaj, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, whoever it may be, you see. This fruit is the tree. How wonderful the tree must be if this fruit has been produced from it. So this is the best glorification you can do for your spiritual master. You become a first-class devotee and a first-class preacher. Whether you're a brahmachari, a householder, a vanaprastha, a sannyasi, it doesn't matter. The same principle. You become a first-class preacher of Krishna consciousness. That will be the best glorification of your spiritual master and of Srila Prabhupada and of this movement. So, that being said, I can ask now if there's any questions. This is a technical detail of which I don't know the answer. Why Bhima is called the second Pandava? Mm-hmm. Do you know, Mataji?
Because Yudhishthira is the oldest and he is the second of the five.
No, he was the second. He was the second one.
He was older than Arjuna.
So Arjuna was number three then, in terms of birth. Okay, there's the answer. Yes.
Sun god is for Arjuna. Then
thought she called Ayur, Yarva, then Bhima is there.
So Bhima was second?
She called first Dharma, Jamaraj.
Yudhishthir was first.
Then she called Yarva, then Bhima. Then she called him, but then Arjuna.
So you're reconfirming it. Okay, very good.
There's two reasons why.
Two, very good. Doubly confirmed, yes?
I am confused that Asatama being like this, so that highly elevated person, like son of Dronacharya.
Son of who?
Son of Acharya. Acharya Dron.
Son of Dronacharya.
Ashwatthama, son of Dronacharya, okay.
Son of Dronacharya. And also, he's like, he got the boon. He's like immortal. He has so great personality. How the great personality has done this kind of offensive thing? How he killed?
How a great personality can do such an offensive deed. Well, he's not that great. How you can say he's that great if he did such an offensive deed? That's my question of you. Why do you claim that he was great?
Because great as a son, son of Acharya, and he actually
had a good... You don't become an Acharya, but Prabhupada had sons also who didn't come out that great. You don't become a great person by birth. This is the material conception. You have to develop the quality. It's an opportunity. The birth is an opportunity to be a great personality by association. But it's not automatic. Look at Maharaj. Vena Maharaj had a very pious father. That he was the most heinous rascal. His father was a very pious man. I forget the father's name. But his father was a very pious king. Vena. But Vena was an absolute demon. In his childhood play, playing with his boyfriends, he would kill them. And as a child, he would kill his boyfriends in play. He would kill them. Can you imagine? But his father was a pious king. So that happens sometimes. Well, sometimes the opposite is there. The father is a demon and the son is like Aranyakashipu and Prahlad. We sometimes say, like father, like son, but it's not always true. Sometimes the father is demon, the son is a great devotee. Sometimes the father is great and the son is rascal. Isn't it? Doesn't that... You study the histories, you'll see it's true. Yeah?
Yeah. You see that... it's like... Prabhupada also mentioned... there's like... materially maybe one may be educated. But if he is not like... devotional way... or spiritually is advanced, then sometimes he may do this kind of activities. And,
if one may have so many qualifications, but if one does not have spiritual qualification, then what good are those qualifications? Great power, great intelligence, even morality. A very immoral person can snap and do things very sinful if he's not Krishna conscious. We see it all the time in the material world. Some person was always known to be a nice person. He snaps and he goes on a killing rampage. He gets laid off from his job and he snaps, takes a gun, he shoots his boss and shoots the co-workers. And he was always known to being a nice person. You see? Mundane morality can snap at any time. But if one is actually a sadhu, a saintly person, he'll never snap. Nothing will ever snap him. He'll be solidly situated in Krishna consciousness. So Ashwatthama may have had many good qualities. But, in a certain very traumatic situation, he snapped. Because he wasn't transcendentally situated in bhakti. Yeah.
Isn't it also the fact that
Yeah, he had bad association. That's right.
And that's what changed the heart.
Yeah. Sangat sanjayate kama. One's consciousness is developed according to one's association. So even a very good person, if he's in bad company, he can be polluted by them. Yeah. But even, it's interesting enough, even the wicked Duryodhana was absolutely horrified that the boys were killed. Because he had enough intelligence to understand this is the end of the dynasty. I'm finished, everyone's finished. At least let the dynasty go on. He had enough intelligence to realize this is the end of the dynasty if these boys are killed. So Duryodhana gets some credit at the end for being horrified by this act of Ashwatthama. Yes.
If your association kind of makes you who you are,
it makes you
who you are. If it influences
you, who you are.
Yes. Okay.
If it influences your consciousness.
That's right.
You earlier said, and I've always been confused by this. How can we actually go into the business world and be associating with those people for
okay.
8 to 10
All right,
hours
I understand.
At least,
I understand.
And keep your level of consciousness.
One of my disciples just wrote me with this exact same question. He had just been made the acting president of the company he works for, and now he's got all this stress, all this heavy association. He's wondering how to be Krishna conscious. Very intense situation he's in. The answer is, the first thing is you have to have very good sadhana. In the morning you have to, before you go to work, you have to intensely associate with Krishna. By rising early, no later than 4 a.m. is ideal. Rising early, taking bath, putting on devotional clothing, tilak, singing their Gavastakam prayers. If you can offer an arti to your home altar, it's very good, a mangal arti. Have very good sadhana. Read the Bhagavatam, have a Krishna prasadam breakfast, and then you're empowered. So instead of, if you're in that, if you've gotten yourself surcharged like that, instead of going out and being influenced by their consciousness, you will be able to influence their consciousness by your consciousness. You see? If you're a preacher can go out all day, a book distributor goes out and associates with materialistic people the whole day. The same materialistic people you associate with in the office, the book distributor is approaching all day on the street, the same materialistic people. Because he's in the mood of giving Krishna consciousness. He's not in any way polluted. In fact, he becomes more energized because he's giving Krishna. So if you can be an ideal example and preach Krishna consciousness by your example at the office, then that will keep you protected. And there's some other tricks too. You can put a Bhagavad Gita on your desk. One person made a devotee like that. He put a Bhagavad Gita on his desk every day. One of the co-workers was interested. He became a devotee. Another thing is, how do you spend the money? This is one of the most important things. When I get my paycheck from my job, do I think it's my money? If I do, then I'm getting polluted. Because everybody at the office thinks it's their money when they get the paycheck. If I get that paycheck, I think this is my money, then I'm polluted by their association. You see? But if I think this is Krishna's money, and it has to all be spent for the pleasure of Krishna, every single penny, I have to maintain my family's comforts in a Krishna conscious way. I have to set aside for the future in a Krishna conscious way. And whatever is left beyond the present Krishna comforts and the future Krishna consciousness need, every penny has to be spent for pushing forward this movement. You see, if I spend the money in a Krishna conscious way, realizing it's all Krishna's money, then every minute I spend at that office is pure bhakti yoga. And I get energized by the job because I'm actually working hard to earn money to spend for in a Krishna conscious way, to spend for Krishna. Yeah, go ahead.
I have tried that in the past, but the way I look at it is when in the morning you get immersed in Krishna consciousness, you almost don't feel like going there anymore. that work and that environment doesn't have taste or value.
And that's a natural thing.
Yeah.
So the thing is, ask your spiritual master, what do you want me to do? I'm your servant. You want me to go to just move into the temple and be a pujari and go out and book distribution? Just ask your spiritual master, I'm your surrendered disciple, what do you want me to do? And then whatever he tells you to do, it's guru seva. He says, keep your job, you know, maintain your household in a Krishna conscious way. Then by doing that, you're doing guru seva at the office. You're going to the office on the order of your guru. The best thing is ask your spiritual master. If you don't have one, get one that you can trust and fully surrender yourself to. The best thing is, you know, is just ask your spiritual master, what do you want me to do? I'm completely surrendered to you, Guru Maharaj. Whatever you tell me to do, I will do. Want me to work a job, I'll do that to please you. If you want me to be a pujari or be a book distributor, whatever you want me to do, I'm just your surrendered soul. That's the easy way. Because it's no longer your own program. It's whatever you can do to please your spiritual master. You're just a puppet in his hand. And then you're totally protected by his Shakti at every minute. And that's the real insider secret. Yes?
Isn't it also true that one of the poisons that you don't take into your association, you give association? You know, like at
yeah,
place.
Yes. That's a preacher, a Krishna conscious person. He's not interested to take the association of materialists. That's the first principle. Sangatsam, what is it? That principle, asat sangat yag. Lord Chaitanya taught that principle. The first principle is give up the association of non-devotees. That means, it doesn't mean you go live in a cave somewhere, but it means now your mood is different. Now you want to give Krishna to everyone. You don't want to take their sense gratificatory consciousness. You want to bless them with Krishna consciousness by your example and by your words in all times, places, and circumstances, 24 hours a day. In that consciousness, you will not be living in the material world. You'll be living in the spiritual world at every minute. If you could take up this mood with full enthusiasm. And the more that our members of this movement take up this mood, this whole planet will become transformed. That's the thing. Yes?
When Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are telling something for the living entities, for the Indians, Bhagavashi.
When Lord Chaitanya is telling. No. Lord Chaitanya is telling automatically. The words of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya not only tell, but they also empower automatically. If one takes it theoretically only, then it simply remains telling. But if one actually embraces that instruction as one's life and soul, then that instruction empowers one to successfully carry it out. In other words, this instruction of Lord Chaitanya, these words of Srila Prabhupada, that by preaching this message all over the world will completely transform this planet. If one accepts these words as absolute truth coming from the lotus mouth of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, that person becomes empowered to make a revolution on this planet by his life and by his words. He will anyone who fully accepts these words of Srila Prabhupada as the true absolute truth, that by preaching this message, this will bring about a revolution on this planet. That person becomes an empowered revolutionary himself. Prabhupada's full Shakti will act through that person. To whatever extent you have unflinching faith in the words of Srila Prabhupada, to that extent you become empowered to manifest this spiritual revolution around you, in the temple, wherever you go, preaching anywhere in the world. It's according to your degree of faith. If you have 1% faith, you get 1% empowerment. If you have 2% faith, you get 2%. How much empowerment do you want to push forward this movement? Do you want to become fully empowered with Krishna Shakti? You see? Someone says, no, I didn't, then I would get puffed up. I don't want to become an advanced devotee because then I would get puffed up. Better just stay in Maya, you know, overeat, oversleep, you know, and indulge my senses in sense gratification. And I don't want to become pure because then I get puffed up. Just see Maya's trick. You know. Prabhupada is pushing us to become pure devotees. Prabhupada ordered me to become a pure devotee. He said, now, he told me in a letter, he said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. Prabhupada's pushing me, become a pure devotee. Sankarshan Das Brahmachari. You see, he was pushing me. So, we have to understand our duty is to become pure devotees. Prabhupada wants us to become 100% empowered. You know what he said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? I quote this, I tell many devotees this quote, and it never ceases to amaze me every time I go back to this quote. Prabhupada, in the CC, Prabhupada says that if a devotee of the Lord chants without any offense, then he becomes Jagat Guru. We always say Prabhupada Jagat Guru, he certainly is. But Prabhupada wanted that every one of his followers should also become Jagat Guru. It's clearly stated in this purport that anyone who chants these names without offense, they become Jagat Guru, and by their influence, the whole world will take up Krishna consciousness. So does Prabhupada want us to become pure chanters of the name, or he wants us to remain on the platform of Nama Parad? What does he want? What will please Srila Prabhupada? Is he? So therefore we should hanker for that 100% empowerment, that we can become completely potent manifestations of Krishna Shakti by our words, thoughts and deeds in all times, places and circumstances. That is obviously what Prabhupada wants us to do. And if one is actually doing that in the proper way, one would not be puffed up by it. Rupa Goswami explains what is the proper mood, and Prabhupada very much appreciated this in his Nectar Devotion. Prabhupada has explained that Rupa Goswami says, I am simply trying to spread this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world, although I am completely unfit, unqualified to do so. This is, Prabhupada said, this should be the attitude of all the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement. As we should feel that I'm the most fallen, misfit, non-devotee. Somehow they let me in the temple, even though I shouldn't be allowed in for all of my bad qualities. That's how we should feel about ourselves. If they let me in the door, somehow it's their causeless mercy. I'm such a fallen dog, lusty, angry, greedy, envious, foolish, envious snake. But somehow they let me in the door. That's how we should feel about ourselves, you see. Totally unqualified. But at the same time, acting on the order of Guru and Krishna, we should try to make a revolution on this planet. So the more you feel unqualified to act, to do it, and realize it's only by the mercy of Guru that anything good can come out of me. His mercy acting through me, you see. So this is the proper spirit. This is the proper move. Yes. How you can distinguish, Prabhu? Why are you making this distinction? Huh? Faith, conviction, and sincerity?
I read one time that in the Nectar Devotion, a proverb is a sentiment or knowledge, but sincerity stands above everything.
Prabhupada says?
Yeah.
But you know what Prabhupada also said? He said, sincerity and intelligence. One can sincerely going on making a mistake. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Prabhu, I'm sorry. Make so many mistakes. Well, I'm sorry. Such a sincere devotee is always apologizing for making mistakes, you see. But he's not using his intelligence. Prabhupada said, told Sarabhi, Saurabh Prabhu, who became Sarabhi Swami, in one letter, he said, someday you'll be the leaders of the world. He said, simply you have to act with sincerity and intelligence, and then Krishna will do everything. It will not, he said, it will not be difficult. Simply act with sincerity and intelligence, and Krishna will do everything. So sincerity is very important. But that sincerity has to be combined with intelligence. You can preach very sincerely and turn people off, isn't it? So many devotees sincerely preach to a guest at a Sunday feast, and that person's completely turned off by their preaching. I'm never going back there again. The devotees so sincerely tried to preach to that person, but they didn't have the proper intelligence of how to preach in such a way to attract that person to Krishna consciousness. So sincerity, yes. There's no doubt sincerity is of the utmost importance, but it has to be combined with intelligence. And how do you get that? You have to hear from those who have intelligence. You have to learn from those who have intelligence how to be intelligent. Yeah.
With this, can you give some tips on how to attract people who aren't sure whether or not they believe in God, mm-hmm. but they are very much attracted to the meditation process mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all that?
Yes. Well, those sort of persons, they all, in all likelihood, have been very much influenced by the Mayavad conception. If they thought that they were God, they could easily believe in God, for example. So there are many, many people out there, and it's a growing number, in fact, who are attracted to a what they call a New Age conception of spirituality. So how we can capture them, how we can actually give them the full-blown proper understanding. They're attracted to the meditational process. The real key is here, desha kala patra, time, place, and circumstance, or time, place, and audience, Prabhupada also translated it. One has to understand the mentality of the person that you're speaking to. And you have to express it in a language which is comprehensible to them. The fact is that what everyone is actually looking for Krishna, they just don't know it. Actually, everybody wants to surrender to Krishna. But they are taking his energy as him. That's what they're doing. They're going after the energy instead of the source of the energy. There are some very logical explanations. These people may not accept the authority of Scripture. But there are very logical ways you can explain it to them. That there is a source of the existence. We have no experience that something is coming out of nothing. Therefore, everything is coming from something. And if you go back to that original something... in which everything ultimately is originating, that is the real object of meditation. As long as you were simply meditate on your own, some, they just want to meditate on themselves, some of them think like that. They have some kind of a self-meditation. But that, any common person can understand the difference between selfishness and selflessness. The more you're selfish, you become miserly, and miserly means miserable. So the more you can become selfless, the more you can get free from your own thinking of yourself the center of existence, the more you become liberated. So if you can expand your conception of the self beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, and you can get to that very origin from which all the selves are emanating at every minute, which is the Supreme Self, you see. If you can connect your meditation there, if you can take your meditation there, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, beyond the ego, the false ego, all the way to the source of all the existence, the source of all the selves and all the energy, If you can take your meditation to that level, then you're going to get the highest level of meditation. You see? You can explain to this person there are three different levels of meditation: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. In the impersonal conception, one thinks oneself to be the center of existence, but simply annihilates the material conception, the body and even the mind, you see, and the ego. They annihilate those, but they still think that they are the center of existence. They think they are one with that center. They are, in fact, the center. But this is still an I-polluted, a selfishness-polluted conception. So, in this way, they're very philosophical and intelligent ways you can explain to people the wonderful concepts given to us by Srila Prabhupada in such a way that relates to exactly where they're coming from philosophically. And you can show them how to take the bliss they're getting now by meditating on their spiritual identity and how you can expand that millions and billions of times by going to a higher level of spiritual understanding. This way, you can guide them. This is actually, there's no meditation like this. This is the ultimate meditation, supreme meditation. Question.
How do we balance preaching and sadhana?
Preaching and sadhana. All right, here's the easy way to balance it. Make your sadhana preaching and make preaching your sadhana. You understand? Then you have perfect balance. When your preaching becomes sadhana and your sadhana becomes preaching, then you have perfect balance. You're perfectly balanced.
I don't understand.
You don't understand. Okay. I'll explain. What is the number one preaching? Apani achari prabhuji veri sikaya. What is the number one preaching? Your example is the number one preaching. If you're smoking cigarettes and you're saying you shouldn't smoke, it's bad for your health. It's called hypocrisy. So you should have perfect sadhana. When the internet first took off, one character, he was really an egocentric character, but he put a camera, he mounted a camera on himself, a little stand, you know, and it hung out in front of him, pointed at him, wherever he was walking all day long, and he put himself on the internet 24 hours a day. You could watch him and he was passing stool and urine even. But, you know, 24 hours a day he was on the internet. He broadcast himself 24 hours a day. But actually the demigods can see everything you're doing. You see, you're being witnessed at every second. It's not that what you're doing is hidden. You know, you're in the Brahmacharya ashram and the lights are off and no one can see you. You're being witnessed at every minute. Yamaraj is taking notes also. Prabhupada says, Yamaraj has his book and Krishna has his book too. So you're being witnessed at every minute. So the demigods can see everything that you're doing. The demigods also need preaching too. You know that? They can use preaching also. Because even though they're great devotees, they still have the material tinge. So the demigods are seeing everything you're doing at every minute. So you can actually preach to the demigods by your very example. By good sadhana, you're preaching to the demigods at every minute. And that good sadhana empowers you for preaching. So you, for the sake of good preaching, you do good sadhana. And by your preaching, you become more inspired to go deeper into sadhana. What does sadhana mean? It means chanting your rounds, it means studying, worshipping the deities, coming for Mangalarti, putting tilak, you know, following strictly the rules and regulations. You understand? That is sadhana. following the articles mentioned, taking shelter of the items of sadhana are given by Rupa Goswami. What are the first five items in the nectar devotion? Take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Number two, get initiated by him and instructed by him. Number three, follow his instruction. Number four, from him learn how to serve the previous acharyas. We have Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. Learn how to serve the previous acharyas from the spiritual master. You see? Number five, inquire from him how to advance in Krishna consciousness. And then the list goes on and on in the nectar devotion. But it all begins from Guru. The beginning of sadhana is to have a solid relationship with a bona fide spiritual master. That's the foundation of sadhana. You see. So, sadhana is a means. Good sadhana empowers you to become a preacher. And preaching in itself is sadhana, because the spiritual sadhana means to obey the orders of the spiritual master. So when I say that preaching is sadhana and sadhana is preaching, I'm not just playing some little word game here to make everybody smile. It's a fact. First class preaching is first class sadhana, and first class sadhana is first class preaching. Because you're showing the example. You're going out every day distributing the books, saying you should follow these books. And they say, well, are you doing it? Well, no, I don't follow them. I'm just here to make money. I'm just here for some, you know, think I'm a great Sankirtan devotee. I don't follow it, no. I don't follow the principles. I don't do what's in these books. I just sell them. So your first class sadhana is preaching. And your first class preaching is the greatest sadhana you can do. So does that answer your question? Okay. Question more?
Questioning the philosophy to someone who's...
Explaining the philosophy.
Questioning the philosophy. Where do we draw the boundary? I mean, sometimes we have to present the philosophy according to the person's mentality.
Of course.
So, like someone is very frivolous, we have to act like a frivolous guy.
Huh?
Someone is very frivolous, and we have to present the philosophy, we have to act like a, talk like a very frivolous guy.
You don't have to be frivolous.
Where do we draw the boundary?
Huh? You're saying you have to be frivolous with a frivolous person?
Yes, I mean, like, distributing books on the street.
No, it's not required to be frivolous. I mean, you know, all kinds of things happen in Sankirtan, you know. There was some girl came up and stuck her finger in my navel one time when I was out preaching. That means you put your finger in her navel, too. You know what I'm saying? When you're out preaching all kinds, you never know what's going to happen, you know. This is a girl who came to the temple, can you imagine? She used to come to the Sunday feed. So anyway, no, you should always remain transcendental. That will have a greater impact. You can try it and see. I mean, see if it lowers your book score, but I don't think it will. They will suspect you even more if you show sobriety. They will respect you more than if you get frivolous with them. Try it. I mean, if it lowers your book score, go ahead and be frivolous. It's okay, but don't put fingers in girls' navels, though. That you shouldn't do. But I think that if you show a sober demeanor, an otherworldly... The classic example is Prabhupada himself when he was walking down Houston Street. What impressed Hayagriva? At that time, Howard. You've read that description? What was it that impressed Hayagriva, Howard Wheeler, when he saw Prabhupada walking down the street? Prabhupada was there in New York City with all these people who are just, you know, everybody's in the sense gratification mood, trying to see what they can enjoy. Prabhupada was he appeared like in a different world. He appeared in a different world. Prabhupada, I agree with wrote that he appeared to be far beyond the metropolis that roared all around him. That's what impressed Hayagriva. You see. That will be your real success in preaching. Where they not only take the book, but they want to surrender, become a devotee. When they see that you're living in a different, even though you're here, bless them with your association on the street, that you're actually living in a different world than their own. It's a world, an amazing mystical existence, far, far beyond anything they've ever experienced. But they become hungry to live in that world that you are living in. You see? That's why good sadhana, you have to have good sadhana, strictly following the rules and regulations. Because if you do, you'll be living in a different world. You will be bringing Vrindavan with you wherever you go. You won't need to go to Vrindavan to get enlivened. You'll be living in Vrindavan at every minute. You see? And when they meet you, they'll feel that they're being carried to Vrindavan just by your association. So I don't think you need to be frivolous with them. You can appreciate them. It's not that you're cold. You become very warm and loving and appreciate them. See the good in that person. Those who are most successful in book distribution, they genuinely appreciate the people. They can see the good qualities in that person. Beneath all the frivolosity, they see the good in that person. And they sincerely appreciate the good in that person. And Prabhupada told me this. I get some personal instructions from Prabhupada about book distribution. He gave me this instruction that if one simply just presents these books and describes these books in the best descriptive manner, then you can convince anyone to purchase, even an atheist. You know what Prabhupada told one book distributor how to distribute books? He said, this is what you tell them. You know, they always wonder, what should be my line on Sankirtan? Prabhupada gave this line. Just imagine you walk up to someone in the street like this, you see. You have the book, and you say, this Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. And it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Sri Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Those persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. And you hand him the book. Just imagine using that line out on the street. The Prabhupada gave that as a Sankirtan line that one can use for book distribution. Or you have the Bhagavad Gita, Raja Vidya. This knowledge is the king of education. It's the most secret of all secrets. It's the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and is joyfully performed. You see? Just imagine using those lines, how non-frivolous, but how full of potency that is. You can experiment with these different techniques and see what works for you. But the bottom line is, keep those books going. Whatever works the best. But I'm of the strong opinion, the more you can show sobriety, you will have the greatest impact. That's my conviction. Yes?
In the Gita towards the end, Bhagavan says, you know, whoever spreads this knowledge is very blessed, but don't frivolously, don't just go around giving it to anyone.
That's right.
And yet we go and give this book to everyone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it hurts my heart that we just indiscriminately.
Somebody was reading it in the bathroom?
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? That's all right. They don't know any better.
But then how do we balance what Bhagavan says to what we're doing?
Prabhupada has explained it perfectly in his purport.
Yeah.
But the verse actually says one should only preach it to the devotees. Actually, if Prabhupada has answered that question, you've read his purport? Prabhupada has described them. The exact verse, I don't know if I can find it fast enough, but the devotee understands the innermost desire of the Lord. And therefore he takes all risk for pushing forward the movement. See, the thing is, Krishna himself came again as Lord Chaitanya. Lord Krishna was not as merciful as Lord Chaitanya. Lord Krishna said, first you surrender and then you get the mercy. That was his program. But Lord Chaitanya's program is without any qualification, just gave everyone the mercy. So this is Krishna's even more merciful manifestation. Krishna did make a condition. First you surrender. But Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada explains this many, many times, explained by Prabhupada again and again and again. Lord Chaitanya made no such condition. He just gave the mercy. So devotee, he understands that this mood of Lord Chaitanya is actually the innermost desire of Krishna. But even philosophically, they're actually all devotees. Every one of those people out there, they're all devotees. It's just buried deep within their heart. So we have to be kind to them. This is one of the qualities of a devotee. He's full of mercy. I mean, you were born probably in a Hindu family. If it hadn't been for the mercy of Prabhupada to come and give this to the Westerners, I would have never had it. Prabhupada's godbrothers criticized him for doing this. They said, this isn't the proper mood to go to the hippies and live with hippies. You're a sannyasi. You're going and living with the hippies in New York? They would criticize him like anything. This is completely improper, you know. They say a Hindu should never even cross the ocean. There's all those injunctions are also there. You're considered fallen just by being here in America, according to some of the Hindu principles. You've fallen down by leaving Bharat, coming here to the Western world. You're considered mlech, according to some strict Hindus. You see. Well, to speak of preaching, just coming here to the West, you're already polluted. You see. So these ideas are not actually the innermost desire of Krishna. Now, if they're reading it while they're seeing the Karmis, Western world, they take passing stool as a great pleasure pastime. And they like to read the newspaper. And they sit and they put some reading material in the toilet room and they just relax. They put maybe some special like fur lining on the toilet lid to make it very comfortable. It's so disgusting, you know. But they take it as like the king on the throne when they pass through. You see? So if such a person is reading Bhagavad Gita while they're passing stool, it's a great blessing to that person. But once he becomes a devotee, he comes to the temple, we've been training him not to do that. But actually he made advancement reading Bhagavad Gita while he was passing stool. He made advancement. It's a little gross to think about it, but it's actually true. He made spiritual advancement. Instead of reading Playboy magazine while he's passing stool, he's reading Bhagavad Gita while he's passing stool. But then he'll learn not to do that. He'll learn not to take the Bhagavad Gita in the toilet room. And then he won't do it anymore. But we shouldn't think, oh, we saw Bhagavad Gita in the toilet room, so we should stop distributing. See, that's a very, you know, that's a material conception. One is not actually understanding the desire of Krishna to save these people. So anyway, our time, I'm going way overboard here. The philosophy is so sweet and it just becomes timeless once we start vibrating Krishna Katha, but we really have to keep time in mind here, so we thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.